Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Gio Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, we have a delayed episode this week. You know, there's been a lot of draft talk for 2 weeks now, and we're late to the party. But I think we have a good we're going to have a good spin on it today.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot that's been covered, but I think if we put our own little twist on it, maybe we can, come up with some new angles for some for our audience.
All right. So everybody's pretty well aware of what the order was. So we're going to go position by position like we usually do around here. Of course, starting with the quarterbacks, as we talked the last time, we mentioned there was only Jared Goff and Nate Sudfeld on the roster. And in the third round this year, the Lions added Hendon Hooker. It's the surprise to many. And then Adrian Martinez is an undrafted free agent. So let's start with your feelings on Hendon Hooker.
I think I mentioned, or, we talked about him a little bit in our pre-draft episode, where we talked about the fact that it wasn't necessarily our preference, but we would understand if they selected him, because when you got to the third round, there was a nice balance of long-term need plus upside. And so while it may not have been something that we would have necessarily done, I think the fact that the Lions made that move isn't totally surprising. Hooker is, I think, the floor once he's healthy is a solid backup quarterback in the NFL. I think that's his floor. From there, though, he has a much higher ceiling than some of the other quarterbacks that you found out that the Lions could have found outside of the first round. And so he has starter potential, but, we're not going to be able to realize that for a while, right? Because first he's got to get his ACL right. Once he gets his ACL right, then there's a learning curve with the playbook, where he's going from a very quarterback friendly offense and he's going to have to adapt to the pro style. There's going to be a lot of experience that he's going to have to gain before he sees the field. And there's going to be a balance between trying to find him at full health, but also find him mentally ready. And once they find that balance, it will become, at what point in the season do they expect to have it? Is it worth it to try and play him at that point? Like, for example, if they put him on the PUP list and they're ready to take him off the PUP, is it too close? Or will they have to make roster cuts that they don't want to make? It really just depends on how fast he progresses. But at the end of the day, he's a guy who I think they're going to be extremely slow with. My kind of gut feeling is he's on the PUP throughout camp, just mentally processing things. He'll probably start the season on the PUP list as well. And then if he comes off, we'll see when it is. So long-term, lots of upside, but they also, I don't think, are going to rush anything with trying to get him on the field. So he's going to be a fun player to watch, but when we get to see him is really an unknown.
How do you think Jared Goff took this pick?
I don't think he's bothered by it at all, because it really doesn't threaten him a whole lot. I don't think Hooker necessarily sees the field anytime soon. And if he does, I don't think he's ever, by the time he does see the field, I don't think he's going to be in a spot where he's going to be like taking starter reps or anything like that, unless, Jared Goff is hurt. And so I don't think he poses a threat at all in 2023. And then, that probably means that Jared Goff is the quarterback going into 2024 as well. And then it becomes a little bit more worrisome, but I don't think he's necessarily bothered by it.
All right, give us a minute on Adrian Martinez, Kansas State.
He's a perfect scout team quarterback. He's got real good legs, good mobility. That's about it. He's not overly accurate, not great in decision making. He can run a pro style offense and good legs. And I think he's a guy who could stick around on the practice squad, especially if Hooker is not fully healthy. And he could be a nice scout team.
All right, flipping over to the running back position. Going into the draft, team had David Montgomery, Craig Reynolds, Jamar Jefferson, Greg Bell, and DeAndre Swift. And to the surprise of all of us, the Lions, you know, end up trading down to number 12. And, you know, everybody got so excited about what was going to happen there. And wind was let out of a lot of people's sails when they drafted Jahmyr Gibbs. Now, as 2 weeks have gone by, a lot of people's feelings have changed on this draft pick, you know, because of course the instant reaction was, well, just take Bijan Robinson at six. You know, if you really wanted a running back that bad, why would you trade back to 12 to get Gibbs? And, you know, the Lions have made it clear Gibbs was their guy. This is the one they wanted. They don't care if anybody thinks they overdrafted him, you know, right. And they make a good point because, you know, we talked about this before too, only 33% of first round draft picks get to a second contract anyways. So, you know, if you like a guy, you get the guy. And if you overdraft him, you overdraft him. You know, like you're having Eric Schlitt tell you like who should be drafted number 12 overall. Does that mean that's gospel? You know?
Mm-hmm. No, it gives us an interesting player because I think, you know, we expected positional value to kind of hold true and that he wouldn't go in the first round or maybe late in the first round. And we absolutely didn't think he'd be there when they picked it at 44. And so we didn't really touch on Gibbs a whole lot because we kind of thought he was going to go in that no man's land in between 18 and 44. And so, but Gibbs, for those people who had the draft board, it was very clearly Bijan was one and then Gibbs was two. And there, and that was a separate tier. Gibbs was in his own tier because he was clearly RB2 for me. I liked him a ton. We had talked about him in previous episodes where he's just a home run hitter. Every time he touches the ball, he has a chance to take it to the end zone. He's not built to run inside, but he's capable. He's a electric back in space. He has real good vision to get outside in like outside zones and he should work well in the gap scheme. And his hands are wide receiver-esque. And so he really opens up the offense in a lot of ways. Essentially what they've done this offseason is they've found a more dynamic version of Jamal Williams, and they found a more dynamic version of DeAndre Swift. And so they want their running game to be a feature point of this, of their offense. And I think they've upgraded both of their running back spots.
Now, did they trade? I guess the way I saw it too, after they drafted Gibbs, is like, all right, well, they're trading DeAndre Swift and they'll trade him within a day or so. Part of me though wanted to be like, just keep him, have the three, you know, like one of them's going to get hurt anyways. It's likely going to be Swift. So I guess I understand why they traded him. But you know, like if one of them did get hurt, you could go 1-2 with Gibbs and Swift, or you could go Gibbs and Montgomery, or you could go Montgomery and Swift. Like there were some decent combos there, but I get it. And I'm sure DeAndre Swift wanted out as soon as Gibbs got drafted. So
yes. Yep. And honestly, look, they returned a future fourth, which is surprisingly more than I thought that they would get for him. Because remember, Okuda didn't get that. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't know if his value was any better than Okuda's. So I was expecting a sixth or seventh round pick. And to get a future fourth, I think is a win. Doesn't matter if it's a year from now, 2 years from now, or whatever, right? Like they're going to eventually get it. And I don't think there was any way they could keep him. I don't think he wanted to be here. I think they were tired of his injury history. His
injury and antics.
Well, right. Like, I mean, we've hinted at this in the media for a while, and Deuce Staley came out and said it last year. Basically, they didn't like the way that he rehabbed. They thought that he could have played sooner than he, you know, made himself available, and they felt like they had to scale back touches for him a lot, and they never really got to unleash him as a dynamic weapon the way that they wanted to. And I believe that they think they got that in Gibbs, and so they've got the full version of what they want, and you know, with a little bit more speed. And then, you know, you pair him with Montgomery, and they're a very nice complement together. And now you're hoping that one of your, you know, reserve running backs is going to be able to handle RB3 or RB4 plus some special teams work, and you know, keep the running game a power point, power focus of the offense.
Am I the only person who thinks that DeAndre Swift can have a great year in Philadelphia, play all 17 games, 2,000 total yards? I don't know, because everybody's all down on him, but it's like, you know, sure. now he's got revenge season on his mind.
All right, but at the same time, like, the Philly people think that, like, they just got a Pro Bowler for a fourth round pick. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't think that's realistic either, right? Like, he's never had more than, like, what, 680 yards or something like that. Like, it's not.
But he's a very dynamic player when healthy.
Sure.
And behind a good offensive line, which he will be behind in Philadelphia.
Yeah, it's not like the Lions line was bad or anything, though.
No, that's what I'm saying. He was productive behind the Lions line. And I don't know if we have to drone on about Swift, because that's the key when it comes to Gibbs. Because, you know, a ton of people, I know it was probably the majority did not like the Gibbs pick, and definitely the fellas on TV didn't understand the Gibbs pick either. Now, as time's gone on and there's been a lot of explaining away, everybody feels better about the Gibbs pick. And I do think that as long as the offensive line is healthy, everybody's going to be fine with the Gibbs pick once the season starts rolling, because he's going to be made look better by, you know, that very good offensive line.
Yep.
All right. One other undrafted free agent. Oh, Jace Kabinda's still on the team. I didn't list him with the other guys, but the undrafted free agent. And if you told me 2 years ago that they're going to have Muhammad Ibrahim on the team, I would have been ecstatic. Like, this guy is a great running back, but then he tore his Achilles at the beginning of the 2021 season. And I don't know, he was, you know, a decent player after that, but you know, he's not.
Yeah, he still went for 1,000 last year in Minnesota. I actually still like him. I think he's got good upside. The Achilles is, you know, what essentially I think led to him being undrafted, but yeah, if you look back to 2021 when he tore it, like, he was beating up on Ohio State that game, 160 yards on the ground or something ridiculous like that. And or maybe it was 130, whatever. But he looked like he was well on his way to being you know, a potential RB1, RB2 type guy. Now I think he's got a good shot to be an RB3. And if he can recover from his Achilles, you know, another year removed, it's all the better. I do think he's going to give Craig Reynolds a run for that RB2 job. And RB3 job, thank you. And then, you know, Jermar Jefferson isn't out of the mix. And then Greg Bell, remember, Greg Bell was a guy they were really high on as UDFA last year. And then he, you know, hurt himself on like the third day of camp or something, and his season was done. So we'll see if he's able to come back and add to the mix as well. I do think the depth battle is going to be very interesting at running back.
All right, flipping over to the wide receiver group. Coming out of the draft, it's Josh Reynolds, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Khalif Raymond, Tom Kennedy, Marvin Jones Jr., Jameson Williams eventually, Trinity Benson, and Stanley Berryhill, but not anymore. They had to let him go.
Maurice Alexander, too.
Yeah, and Maurice Alexander. They didn't add anybody in the draft at the
wide receiver. They had a Green in the seventh, right?
Oh, that's right. Antoine Green. Yeah, Antoine Green in the seventh. And then they added a bunch of guys as undrafted free agent type of guys. So they're very high on Antoine Green. We'll see what ends up happening, because, he's kind of an interesting player.
Yeah, he's got an X body and a Z skill set, which, you know, he's 6'2", 210. But most of the time at North Carolina, he played the Z, where he was running a lot of verticals. But he's a really good contested catch guy down the field. He's got good speed. I think he has the capability to open up his route tree And if he can do that, he's got X written all over him. In the interim, I think he's a nice field stretcher that can contribute as a rookie, maybe sneak in that wide receiver six type role, or maybe five until Jameson gets ready. But I'm very interested to see him in camp, because there's a lot of intangibles to like about him. They added two undrafted guys, Chase Kota from Oregon. He's more of like a big slot type guy, but I think he's also, again, got the size where he could be the X. He's kind of like your Quintez Cephas type replacement. And then Kaitan Thompson from Virginia. He's like a multifaceted player where they used him in a lot of different ways. He was a quarterback at Mississippi State. Is that right? Mississippi State? I think it was Mississippi State. His first game as a quarterback, it was as a true freshman. He got the nod to start the bowl game against Louisville and their junior quarterback, Lamar Jackson.
Lamar Jackson.
In Lamar Jackson's final game as a college quarterback. And Thompson led them to victory as a dual threat quarterback. Now, he's no longer a dual threat quarterback because his completion percentage is 46%. So they shifted
Jack Fox has a better completion percentage than that.
So at 6'4", 220, they decided to shift him basically to what they labeled as wide receiver. But they used him kind of like like Taysom Hill, where they lined him up as like H-back. They lined him up with the Z, lined him up in the slot. They lined him up. They did ran him on end arounds, quick screens, bubbles, all kinds of, I mean, they used him all over the place. And so he's not a guy that's like your traditional 6'4", 220. You think he's going to be your X, but he's not. He's almost like, it's almost like he's a pass catching tight end that is, they call a receiver who also has that like sneaky quarterback skill set in his back pocket. And so I think he's very much a like Taysom Hill type of guy for the Lions, and he could be a sneaky one to keep an eye on, because when you have that type of skill set, you can sneak in as like one of the last players on the roster.
Chad, worth mentioning to the listeners who don't have your draft board, Chase Kota was not on it. You did not have him on the board.
No, I don't know a whole, I mean, like I said,
very
I
undraftable.
I went back and watched him later. He's like a big slot to me. I think I saw enough of his route running that I think he can be, he's got some X potential, but he's going to have to really work to get a chance at the roster.
You think Antoine Green makes the team?
Right now? Yeah. I would slot him in it as six. Really? Based on what I've watched him, what I've watched from him, you know, look, Tom Kennedy is probably going to have a better preseason, and Tom Kennedy's going to look
sharper.
Kennedy's
going to be great in the preseason.
Oh, he's going to, yeah. But at the end of the day, they know what Tom Kennedy is. We know what Tom Kennedy is. We know who he is. And he is a great special team, or he is a great preseason player who can't really find his niche on special teams. And if you can't find your niche on special teams, it's hard to make the roster as wide receiver six. So Green, I think he has that ability to do that. And that's kind of why I'm giving him the edge. I think he'll have a harder time beating Trinity Benson than he will beating Tom Kennedy, just because unless Tom all of a sudden discovers special team skills that we haven't seen yet.
It's amazing Trinity Benson has been able to hang. Him and Tom Kennedy, they've been able to hang on as long as they have.
Yeah.
All right. Offensive, surprisingly, not big seismic movement at wide receiver. All right.
Yeah.
Going inside. Sorry.
No, that's it. I was going to say just a late pick.
Now, where there was seismic movement that you and I didn't really expect. mm-hmm. was at the tight end position. Going into the draft, Brock Wright, James Mitchell, Shane Zylstra, Derek Dease Jr. They add Sam Laporta in the draft, and that came as mm-hmm. a surprise to everybody. Once again, a lot of upset people because you're just trading one Iowa tight end for another.
Yeah.
And maybe you overdrafted this one.
Well, you know, I think he's a guy that we've been talking about for a while because they met with him at the combine, and he definitely comes off as like one of those grit type guys, right? He is more pass catching than blocking right now. His blocking can need some improvement. And so I think most people looked at the tight end position and said, if they were going to take one, they would probably take a blocking tight end or someone who's at least, you know, very skilled as a blocker. Laporta's effort is definitely there. His technique can need some tweaking though, but as a pass catcher, he's really dynamic. And apparently they prioritize that more than most people were expecting. But like I said, the intangibles just scream Dan Campbell. And I think that's really why they kind of fell in love with him. He's going to be tight end one by the end of training camp. He is, right? Like he's probably not going to start there. Right. Cause like we have said, Wright, Mitchell, Zylstra are all guys that are going to be returning and they're all going to be fighting for spots. But I think Laporta is just too talented to, you know, where they're, I don't think they're going to be able to hold him off. I think he's eventually just going to be able to elevate his game to a different level. Maybe he splits starting duties with Brock Wright for a while, because again, they really like Brock Wright, but I think it's a matter of time before Laporta ends up being the top guy.
All right. One additional player that the Lions were able to get their hands on was, you know, part of the international program.
Yeah.
Right. And they added an Australian tight end, or at least what everybody, you know, like he's never played tight end before, but he's going to be a tight end in the NFL. Patrick Murtaugh. We've been exposed to this program a little bit in some Hard Knocks episodes. You know, when Dallas was the Hard Knocks team in the last couple of years, they had an offensive lineman who grew up in Mexico, and, you know, they ended up playing the Cardinals who had some tight end from like Austria or something. Right. So
right.
The Lions go around with it. It's actually not the first Lions go around with it, because remember, didn't they have like a rugby player or was it an Australian rules football player? They
no,
had another
it was...
guy.
Yeah, they had, but he was on the U.S. rugby team. He was, but he played rugby. Yeah. It wasn't international.
Yeah. It's got to be international.
But yeah. So Murtaugh, for those of you who don't know, he basically doesn't cost them a roster spot. Right. So he is,
he's going to be there all year.
Right. Like he's part of the roster, but he doesn't count towards the 90-man roster during training camp. And when they do cutdowns, if he makes the 53, then he obviously will count against the 53. But if he doesn't, they can add him to the practice squad, again, at no cost against the practice squad, and they can keep him around for the full year. And so this is part of the international program that the league runs, and the Lions happen to be the beneficiaries of this. And so, yeah, he's a guy that could be with the team the entire year. Will he grow from there? I think that's to be seen. Like the Eagles left tackle, Jordan Mailata, thank you. He came through this program, right? Like he was so good that the Eagles ended up actually drafting him before he was assigned to them, or would have been assigned to someone. So they ended up drafting him out of this program. And because they saw him as a diamond in the rough, and sure enough, look what he's become.
Derek Dease Jr. probably doesn't make the team now. Do you think they carry four tight ends, Laporta, Wright, Mitchell, Zylstra?
The trick will be if they carry like five wide receivers, like if they wanted to go Josh Reynolds, Amon-Ra, Marvin, Green, and Khalif, and that while Jamison is suspended, they could carry four tight ends if they wanted to, right? If you have one less wide receiver, and then you just kind of use Zylstra in a lot of different receiving ways. At the same time, once Jamison comes back, you're probably going to have to lose one of those guys, right? So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know exactly how they're going to do it. There's a few ways. I'm not ruling out keeping four, though.
Going down to the offensive line, of course, returning, you know, it's Decker, Jackson, Ragnow, Vitae, Sewell. Glasgow will get to compete with Vitae for all we know. And then Eze, Stenberg, Matt Nelson, you know, these are the Coyote Oshweka, Darren Paulo. Those are all the incumbents. Oh, and Russ Pierschbacher.
Obi Eze, too. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Obi and Eze. And in the fifth round, 152 overall, they took offensive lineman Colby Sorsdahl from William and Mary, of all places. You had him buried on your draft board down at number 349. Small school guy, although when you read about him, you heard he had some opportunities to transfer out of there and go somewhere better, and he decided not to. He was enjoying his role of being, you know, the star offensive lineman and helping transfers coming in and the younger players and being like another coach on the field. Another dude with the high grit score, you know, that they were looking for. If you've watched the video yet on the schedule release, did you watch the Lions schedule release video yet?
I did.
Yeah, so they were looking for the grit rating.
Yeah.
Madden, they couldn't find it.
That's very close to the grit index. I do think there's some correlation. They might have stolen
from you.
Well, I think I'll take it as a hat tip. even if it's not, I'll claim that it is just to help stroke my ego. but look, yeah, Sorsdahl, he's just not a guy that I watched because I didn't watch any William and Mary this draft season.
How dare you?
And so I didn't. The only info I had on him was stuff that I had studied from other people who had a chance to watch it. I just didn't have a chance to. But one of the things that stood out to me when I eventually did, you know, get to see him was he was training with Duke Manyweather, and Manyweather is one of the premier offensive line trainers. And the fact that he's kind of taken him on, I think speaks volumes for his potential, because Duke is really considered a high profile guy. And so that really speaks to me. Now, what I found interesting was I went back and I've been watching a bunch of videos on him. And one of the videos I watched was I just watched when he was drafted. What did the different TV analysts say about him? But what stood out to me was when they announced him as a guard. So they said, you know, Detroit selects guard Colby Sorsdahl. Now, Sorsdahl was a tackle at William & Mary, but the Lions who signed the card and they write the position in themselves, and then the fans were the ones who read it, but they announced him as a guard. And so that tells me that they're looking at him on the inside. And I know that like people are going to say, well, you know, debate where he's going to play, but man, I mean, they wrote guard on the card. That's good enough for me. I think that's where he's going to end up. So when you look at his game, you know, there's a lot of mobility in William and Mary's scheme. What they ran was what they call a wide zone stretch, right? Which means that they didn't just run like an outside zone. They like ran an outside zone that like moved. So they created like a wide blocking stance. So essentially he was pulling a lot, or kind of like how guards pull in a gap scheme. So he had to do a lot of movement and pulling at William and Mary. And so those skills translate over to this gap style scheme. And so I do think he's got a real good shot at adapting to the scheme early. And while he'll probably start camp on the third line, he'll probably work his way up. And I think he has a good shot. Obviously they liked him or they wouldn't have drafted him where they did. And that, you know, when you look at those kind of things and you start putting it together, I think he's got a good shot to make the team.
I despise the pick, but then I was fed all the propaganda and I started to like him. So, you know, I hope he really pulls through.
Yeah. It's going to be fun to watch. Like it, whenever you take a lineman, it speaks, you know, volumes about what they think about him. So let's see what happens with him.
All right. They also added Connor Galvin from Baylor, who is a guy you had rated higher. than Colby Sorestall on your draft board.
Yep.
Right tackle or swing tackle, Ryan Swoboda from Central Florida. And, you know, guard center combo, Brad Cecil from South Florida.
So Galvin played left tackle for Baylor for a long time, a 4-year starter, essentially. He had something like 300 and like 3,500 snaps at left 34, tackle.
46. Yeah. Nice memory.
Thank you. A lot. I knew it was a lot, like, because he was, like I said, 4-year starter plus. He's got short arms too. So while I think he might stick at tackle, they might kick him in the guard as well. He was a guy I did watch, and but I still kind of had him ranked in that undrafted area. I do like his experience. He was a captain. It'll be interesting to see what they end up working with him. My guess is they kind of move him all over the place. That includes tackle and guard. Swoboda was not a guy on my list, I don't believe. He's got a ton of right tackle experience. He is 6'9½", 309 pounds, and his RAS is 9.32. At this point, I almost say lose 20 pounds and become a tight end, because like, he's massive and he's athletic. And honestly, that's one of the things that attracted them to Matt Nelson back in the day. Matt Nelson was a athlete who was tall. I mean, Matt Nelson's 6'7", 300, and his RAS was like 8 and 8½, right? So could he turn into Matt Nelson? I don't know. Maybe. We'll see. But he'll get a chance. And you know, he'll start out on that third line, and we'll see where he goes from there. Cecil, I don't know a ton about Cecil. I mean,
he was not on your list either.
There you go. I know he's got a lot. He's another like multi-year starter at South Florida, played center almost exclusively, didn't play any guard. But he's a guy I'm going to be learning about kind of as we go.
All right. Next, we're going to be flipping over to the defensive side of the ball. Well, before we do that,
sure,
what do you think about the totality of the offense? Obviously, we're going to say the offense improved because they added players, period.
Sure.
But they did spend a lot of draft capital on the offense, but probably more than we expected on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, three of their first five picks were on offense, right? So, you know, we talked about that being a possibility because that's where a lot of the value was. You could find those skill players at different points. And the first, in, you know, in the top 100, and, you know, obviously Gibbs is, it helps them out. And then, Hooker, of course, is that long-term vision, but yeah, I think they looked at this and said, in their minds, I think they landed essentially a guy who's going to be a co-starter at running back, and they're tight end number one, and a quarterback two who has the potential to be quarterback one. And I think, so they've got to be really happy with what they ended up with for both the short and long-term.
Do you still think they need to add a veteran backup for Goff? Are we going to roll with Hooker?
Yeah, I think they're going to roll with Sudfeld as two.
As two.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. That's my guess. And then they're going to kind of like, work Hooker in the background and keep Martinez as the scout team guy. And when
you really think they're going to carry four, Martinez will be on the practice squad, but think they were going to keep four.
Yeah. Because I don't know when Hooker is going to be healthy. Right. My guess again is that Hooker ends up on the pup. So he won't count against the roster or the practice squad. And so I think he's not going to be able to practice for like the first 6 weeks. And then after that, if he's able to practice, I don't think there's any way for them to sneak him through the practice squad. You know, they're not going to be able to cut him. Someone will claim him. So they'll have to carry him. And if they carry him, then you lose Martinez. You don't need him anymore. But at the same time, I don't know if you want to put Hendon Hooker out there as the scout team guy. So Martinez, I think, can kind of stick as quarterback three, quarterback four, while Hooker is just, you know, they just take their time with him. And will he pass Nate Sudfeld this season? I don't know. Will he eventually? Absolutely. I think he's a much better quarterback, but
I hope so. Yes, Nate Sudfeld. Hope he does it by the end of this year.
Yeah, and I think they're just going to take it super slow. And, you know, like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if Hooker is on one of the injury lists, on the PUP list, for, you know, a good third of the season, if not longer.
All right, flipping over to the defensive side of the ball. We'll start in the middle where I have most of my anger, you know, corralled. Aleem McNeil, Isaiah Bugs, Levi Onwuzurike, maybe, maybe not. We'll find out. Benito Jones. Those are the four guys that were coming in to the draft. The Lions walk away with Broderick Martin, who they drafted in the third round, 96th overall pick. You had him on your list in the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, in the seventh tier of defensive linemen. He's big, which, you know, like, that's the one thing I do like about him. 337 pounds, right? 6'5".
Yeah, 6'5", yeah.
Yeah, so he's big. So that's great. Went to Western Kentucky.
Yep.
Was he a dominant player at his level, Eric?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you had to be. In order to get drafted out of, you know, a small school like that, you have to dominate people. And that's what he did. Obviously, they have high hopes for him because they traded multiple picks to get up into the third round in order to take him. I wrote an article breaking down all the trades, and it's very interesting because the two trade backs that they did on day two, they acquired two fourth round picks, and the day the trade back they did in round one, they acquired a day two pick, plus they acquired a fifth round pick from the Cardinals. Well, when they traded up with the Cardinals into the third round, they traded both the fourth round picks that they acquired in trade backs and the pick that they originally got from Arizona in the original trade back. They gave it right back to Arizona again. So essentially they got him by making a couple of trade backs on day two, plus using house money from the trade they made with the Cardinals on day one. And so it's a lot of capital to give up. But realistically, all the positioning and trading that Brad Holmes did put them in a situation where they come out with him at the end without it really, you know, it being as big of a value, you know, as it was, or as it seemed, I guess, right? So obviously they like him. If you don't trade up into the top 100 to get a guy unless you think he's going to be a guy that can contribute right away. Remember, this is in the area of Kirby Joseph pick, right? So that's got to be my expectation here, is that they're expecting him to be a guy who is, you know, in the two deep rotation right off the bat and has the potential to take over a starting spot if it presents itself. And, you know, if something happens to Bugs, away he, you know, can he step in? And if they take him in the top 100, the thoughts are they probably think he can hold that down. So be interesting to see. You watch him on tape. He does dominate. You can see, like, he's a 0-1, but they pushed him out to the 3 at times just because he was bigger than everybody and a little bit faster than everybody. He doesn't have an overly impressive, like, athleticism profile. But at 6'5", 330, and if you look at him, he doesn't look 330.
But, well, he's 6'5", he's all stretched out.
Exactly. But yeah, being 6'5" definitely helps. But he doesn't carry it like he's like overweight or anything. He's just a big human.
So you're telling me he has to add another 30, 35 pounds.
if he does, I mean, and that helps him, great. Like he has a good strong anchor. He absorbs double teams pretty easily, and his primary focus on every play is to stop the run. That's what he wants to do. Every single down, he wants to stop the run.
Well, that's right? What I like to hear.
And that's, I think, their big priority in going to get him. As they said, we need a space eater who can stop the run and help free up our other guys. And hey, if that's what you get with him, great. I mean, the last nose tackle they took in the third round was Aleem McNeil. So they got to be happy, you know, if we look at their success rate, this is a pick where you have to say, we all said, let's trust Brad Holmes ahead of the draft. Well, let's trust that he made the right pick here.
All right. There's a couple of guys they added as undrafted free agents. Chris Smith from Notre Dame, Corey Durden from NC State. You had Durden rated right around the range that Martin was. And you don't have Smith on the board.
No, they're both kind of the same type of guy. They're really like three technique bodies, but nose tackle skill sets. So if you're not a big nose tackle, you're typically not getting drafted. If you're not a fast three technique, then you're typically not getting drafted. And so these guys are kind of like those, that in between, but that in between also allows them to be, you know, position flexible. And I think that's a real key for the Lions, is that they like the guys that can move around a little bit. And so that's what these guys bring to the table, but they're a little bit redundant to one another. And we'll see, you know, how they, you know, how the competition works itself out. I think one guy, like they added Chris Covington. They signed him recently. And so he's more of like a 3-5. So he's a little bit more like Levi than the rest of the crew. But again, these guys are all kind of, they focus on run stuffing. All the additions have really had more of a focus on run stuffing. And so I think they're just going to shuffle these guys up and see who can do it, because that's one of the keys that they've needed to improve over the offseason.
All right. Flipping over to defensive end, not much action here. Not surprisingly, everybody was kind of crossing their fingers and hoping Will Anderson would drop. He obviously didn't. Right. The Texans traded back up to get him at number 3. When the Lions moved down from 6, they weren't going to get Tyree Wilson. So they stuck with Aiden Hutchinson, Romeo Okwara, Charles Harris, John Kaminsky, Josh Pascal. They did add Zach Morton as an undrafted free agent. Where was he from? I don't remember watching him play. Akron. Akron. Well, actually, I did see him play in person once. But nice. He doesn't stick out in my memory. One of the worst, like 59-0 games I ever watched.
Zach Morton transferred to Akron 2 years ago. That coaching staff had him put his hand in the dirt. Most of the time he did stand up a little bit, but he had a very nice season. And he was started 14 games and away he went. And then last year in 2022, Akron did a complete coaching staff overhaul, new schemes, new coaches, the whole big thing. And Morton went from being a starter to like a rotational player, stood up a little bit more. Excuse me. And he's you know, he's athletic, right? And so he can kind of do a little bit of both. I think his RAS is like 9.3. But when he got stood up, it was like there was a learning curve to it, and it took him a little bit of time to acclimate. And I don't think he ever really landed in the as every down type of starter. So that's why he kind of has flown under the radar. He wasn't an every down starter at Akron. Even though he was the year prior, his production numbers did go up, which, you know, shows that he was adapting to the position. But you're drafting him basically on potential. He was at the Lions Pro Day. And that performance at the Pro Day, I think, is really what got him the UDFA contract.
I not only watched him play, I saw him return an interception for 17 yards against the Michigan State Spartans in a 52-0 loss. I remembered the score incorrectly. All right. Not really too much more to say about Zach Morton. Moving back to the linebacker groups, we're talking first about the hybrid Sam guys. Nobody added there. James Houston, Julian Okwara. No surprise, they really didn't add anybody to that grouping. Now, let's talk about the off-the-ball linebackers, where another big seismic movement in the first round. pick 18. Lions pick Jack Campbell from Iowa. They love their Iowa players, apparently. They love
and
their
Alabama.
Yep. And Alabama. They love their grit scores. So came into the draft, Alex Anzalone, Malcolm Rodriguez, Derek Barnes, Jalen Reeves-Maybin, Anthony Pittman, adding Jack Campbell to that group. And the expectation for Campbell is to be a starter day one, right?
Yeah, it would be shocking if he wasn't. And in my opinion, he's probably your Mike. Anzalone has played Mike and Will. He can still be the captain. He can still be the green dot at the Will. But in my kind of assertion of Campbell's game, I think he's the Mike. I think that's where they want him to be. That's where his future is. And so there's really no need to kind of mess around. Now, they've already given us the line that, you know, we cross train all our linebackers at all the linebacker positions. And that's great. But his skill set projects to the Mike, and you don't invest a pick 18 in a guy unless you're going to make him the dead center of your defense. And so that's what I expect. Very high athlete, doesn't always play up to that athletic profile, but he's a guy who's going to probably give you double-digit tackles a game. And, you know, you're not even going to realize it. You're just going to be like, oh, look, Campbell had 10 tackles. Oh, look, he had 12 tackles, you know. It's probably – I don't know how quickly we're going to see the impact, right? Like, I don't know if we'll see the impact, like, immediately, kind of like what we saw with Malcolm. But I think there's enough there – and they, you know, again, they feel high enough on him that there's he's probably going to be one of the starters. Anzalone is probably going to be the other starter, which pushes Malcolm to the bench because they really only use two off-the-ball linebackers. I still think Malcolm's going to get some play because, you know, I think he's too good not to, right? But, you know, you could probably, in my opinion, Malcolm's probably the better linebacker than Anzalone long-term, but I, you know, if you're in win now mode, you're probably going to lean on Anzalone a little bit more this season. So my guess is Rodriguez goes to the bench, but he still gets a pretty fair amount of snaps in some sort of like, you know, three-man rotation, and Campbell will be the guy that the Lions defense is hoping to, you know, be the center anchor of what they want to do.
You talked about Campbell making an impact right away, and you do point out Rodriguez made an impact right away last season, but do you think more is going to be on Jack Campbell's plate, which might put him in a position where he'll be swimming a little bit early on in the season, especially since they didn't draft him, you know, high level help at defensive tackle in front of them,
right?
To be keeping those linemen from getting to the second level as quickly. It'll be interesting with Campbell. I always liked Campbell at Iowa, but then when he started testing off the, you know, off the charts, you know, leading up to the draft, it's like, uh-oh, this is a bad sign. But, you know, high grit score guy, you know, he's a Lions type of guy. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens with him.
I actually think he's going to have more pressure on him than Gibbs is, because Gibbs is surrounded by talent where he's not going to have to do it all. Campbell is going to be the guy that the they focus. Expect to hold that middle down by himself almost. So that's going to be hard. It's going to be high expectations. He's going to be criticized constantly by fans and probably analysts as well. Yeah, expectations are going to be real high on him.
All right. They added two other linebackers, undrafted free agents, Isaac Darkangelo from Illinois and Trevor Nowaski, a local from Saginaw Valley State.
Yeah, Darkangelo is a guy who played at Illinois. He's a really good special teams player. Word is that I was passed along was that the area scouts really thought Darkangelo had a chance to make the back end of the roster as a special teams ace, right? So that's really where he's probably going to make his hay. You know, they might have a crack at the back end of that off the ball lineup where you could sneak in if you're really good on special teams. And I think Darkangelo will get a chance at that. Nowaski is very interesting because he's got a Anthony Pittman like skill set where he can line up at the mic, he can line up at the Sam. You can blitz him from the mic, you can blitz him from the outside, he can drop into coverage, you can actually split him out over the slot if you need to. Highly athletic linebacker, really good size, and he's kind of a sleeper for the roster as well, just because that size slash skill set translate. He's a 9.86 RAS guy at linebacker, which is awfully impressive. 6'2.5, 240, but he's got, you know, 4.5 speed plus really like almost corner like agility measurements, which is really impressive. And you can see that when he kind of drops into the slot. He's really comfortable in zone. You don't see him carry guys in man as much, but in zone, he's really fluid, and he knows how to undercut the ball, and he gets his hands on him on a lot of balls thrown his way. And so, sneaky guy, but again, small school, so he's got to dominate. He did, and now can you get that to, is that, you know, something that he can translate, and how quickly will determine if he makes the roster or not.
Oh, very sneaky. You like this, you like this Nowaski guy. All right, corner, the group at corner. Man, coming into the draft, Emmanuel Mosley, Cherry Jacobs, Cameron Sutton, Will Harris, Jaren Williams, CJ Gardner Johnson, Chase Lucas, Khalil Dorsey. The corner position is where the team had really been overhauled in the offseason. Yeah. And on top of it, and I guess, you know, it's a player that a lot of us Lions fans were looking for the team to draft, maybe at 18, but they end up drafting him at
45. That's right.
Is Brian Branch out of Alabama. So he'll be joining that nickel type role, playing the slot player, right?
Yeah, he's going to be, I think he's going to be fantastic. May not start, you know, necessarily in year one, because those jobs kind of seem like locked down, but his positional range and the skill set that he has, he's going to be hard to keep off the field because he can line up in the slot. He can line up in the box. He can drop into a zone safety. He can play as like a nickel cover linebacker. There's so many different things that he can do. There is a lot of redundancy to Gardner Johnson, but it doesn't matter. Like you can still play two hybrid guys like that at the same time. And it's not going to matter because you can play one at linebacker and one in the slot. If they spread you out four wide, you can use both guys in the slots, right? Like I don't think his redundancy to Gardner Johnson is going to keep him off the field as much as people, you know, are thinking initially. In my opinion, he's such a good skill player that he'll be able to find the field, as a rookie. Look, he started as a freshman in Nick Saban's secondary, and that's something that you can't do unless you are highly intelligent. And so I expect him to come in, know the playbook, and be ready to contribute and get on that field very early in camp, and a guy that they lean on when the season starts as well.
14 tackles for loss in 2022. So three sacks, you know, only three career interceptions, but those stats point out, very dynamic player. You had him as number one on your safeties board, and you're slotting him in as the nickel man, but you pointed out they're going to be using him in all sorts of roles. They also add Starling Thomas V as an undrafted free agent.
Starling is very interesting to me, and he's a little bit of a sleeper for the team because he has 4.38 speed. He can play outside. He can play inside. He is a starter as a gunner. He could, and I think you can make the roster like that, right? If you have 4.3 speed and it shows that you have 4.3 speed, you're position versatile on your side of the ball, and you can be a starting gunner. Well, that's a recipe to sneak in kind of as like an outside, as like one of your last corner spots. So I think he was my highest of the UDFAs, my highest ranked of the UDFAs. Maybe him or Ibrahim was Ibrahim, I had what, 208? Thomas, I had 185. Yeah. So Thomas was the highest of my UDFAs. And, you know, he's sneaky. He's a guy that his skills look very NFL translatable. And he can turn and run. He can drop in zones. He can, like I said, he can play inside out. And he's got a really good mentality that fits with this organization. So sneaky guy to keep an eye on, can be like the next Jerry Jacobs type of guy if he gets a shot. And so he's a guy to keep an eye on in camp.
All right. The safety position, we talked about Brian Branch will fit there a little bit, but Tracy Walker, Ife Melifonwu, Kirby Joseph, Savion Smith comes back. Yep. Brady Breeze, Xavier Bell. They did add Brandon Joseph, a safety from Notre Dame, to make things confusing with now two Josephs in the safety group.
Right. He's a traditional safety, right? He's a single high safety who can contribute on special teams. So he's the guy that's, you know, maybe potentially going to be in the mix to replace CJ Moore. Now, will he be able to do that? I don't know. But he's a guy who has, you know, he's been on NFL radars for a couple of years. He played at Northwestern for a few years prior. He was a starter. He has a nose for the ball, but he's probably like most comfortable as in that kind of single high role. And so safety jobs are going to be hard to come by. Like Tracy Walker and Joseph are solidified, but the fact that Gardner Johnson and Branch can also both play safety means that the reserve spots are going to be hard to come by. Savion Smith and Ife, they might be fighting for the last safety spot, right? I mean, they may only keep three safeties because of what their slot guys can do. So if not, it sure seems like Ife and Savion are the front runners. And then, you know, Breeze is a really good special teamer. He'll be ahead of Joseph on the depth chart as well. And so Joseph will have a hill to climb. And, you know, like I said, not just safeties, but he'll have to worry about those slot guys as well.
This is Brandon Joseph. He had six interceptions as a sophomore at Northwestern in 2020, and that was only in eight games. Forced 10 turnovers in his career. Well, actually forced 11 turnovers in his career over the 4 years. So, you know, he's a playmaker type of a guy. And I mentioned Xavier Bell already being on the roster. He was not. He's a tryout guy. This is a guy they offered a tryout to for Portland State.
Yep. Yeah. They have three tryout players that we know about. Now, by the time some people listen to this, the Lions will probably have already released all their official UDFAs and their tryout players, and so we'll probably miss some. But Xavier Bell is one of the tryout players. Darius Shepherd on offense.
XFL Special Teams Player of the Year.
There you go. And then John Parker as a kicker is, I think he's another special team XFL guy, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, from San Antonio.
And so he'll compete with Badgley. But again, he's on a tryout. He does not even have a contract yet. So
that's it. You know, so that's the roster overhaul coming out of the draft. And the big thing, I guess we should go back to the line, to the defense as a whole. Has the defense gotten better? You know, like, I guess that's a stupid way to put it, because of course they got better. They added some new young guys. Has the I don't know, what kind of impact are these guys going to just make in totality?
Yeah. Like, you know, a lot of the offseason assets were put into the defensive backs, right? And so free agency was spent working on those guys, and then they were able to add Branch, which really just helps deepen that group. You have seven edge rushers that are returning. They're all healthy, which they weren't all a year ago. So that's an upgrade. Obviously, Martin on the interior is a guy that I think underwhelmed a lot of people who aren't familiar with him. But obviously the Lions are very high on him. So if he can be, you know, an effective run stuffer, then he'll be worth it. And then that position will be upgraded. And then obviously Jack Campbell upgrades that linebacking crew as well. So you'd have to say each of the positions, each position group got better, even if it's a little better. They all got better on defense one way or another in this draft and offseason as a whole.
All right. Let's talk about the schedule release.
All right, cool.
That happened today. Today is Thursday.
Yeah, let me pull it up. So the first opponent that they have is Kansas City.
That was the early leak.
Yep, they opened the season. They are not just the opening. This isn't just the Lions opening game. This is the NFL 2023 opening game, right? Mm-hmm. Chiefs are returning Super Bowl champs, obviously.
They will get maybe they get their rings. Maybe they put up a banner. They'll do something.
Yeah, they'll do something. And Lions will watch them. And they'll use that as fuel. And hopefully. In Arrowhead. Yeah, hopefully. In Arrowhead. And there's already, you know, their focus is already on that game. So we'll see how they go. I am very nervous about that game.
They're not going to win that game, Eric.
Earlier in the week, I had said the one game I don't want is I don't want Kansas City in week one. And then sure enough, that's what happened. So awesome news there. It's
going Chiefs are to be, already a touchdown favorite, right, for that one?
It's down to 6.5 now. Okay. But yeah. But look, the Chiefs have won their last 8 opening week one games. The Lions have lost their last 5, right?
Mm-hmm. So something's got to give, Eric.
Something does. And week one is historically wonky, right? Because teams aren't always efficient. So they're the best team on the Lions schedule, no doubt. And so playing them right off the bat, you know, could be a good advantage. It could be a test of merit. If they've somehow found a way to win, that would be a real tone setter. They're going to be in front of a national audience because everybody's going to be watching that game because that's going to be the first football game, you know, they've had in however long.
I'm already excited for it. And I'm sure there's tons of other people will be too.
And you know what? I think as we get closer, I think I'll start getting a little hyped up for the game a little bit more and I'll start, you know, trying to find ways for them to win. Right now though, it's not happening. I'm a little worried. Because I think it's going to be a hard one. So many advantages for the Chiefs in that game. But again, you get the hardest game out of the way and then it gets easier from there. So, revenge game for, against Seattle in week 2 at home.
Yeah, but they're going to be tough. But yeah. You got a good point. Yeah, the Lions will have, you know, some sort of revenge. Yeah, like, hey, we got to win this game. They held us out of the playoffs, so, you know, we got to win this one.
Yeah, yeah. They, you know, that loss to Seattle might have cost them the playoffs. They beat Green Bay, and Seattle then sneaks in on their coattails. Then Seattle takes their draft pick. And so, yeah, there's a lot of revenge.
It takes and it's your draft pick.
I'm pretty sure we know what was going to happen. So yeah, I that seems like revenge. Falcons in week 3 again at home.
Falcons rebuilding, but they have some strong offensive weapons. Hopefully the defense is up for the task.
John Kaminsky, who was drafted by the Falcons and they almost ruined his career, is going to put the entire team on his back and win that game for the Lions. He looks like the Lions did a release as part of their, you know, schedule release. They did a video release where they had all the players pick which opponent they wanted. Kaminsky walked up, didn't say a word, picked the Falcons, held it right in front of the camera, just silently staring as intensely as possible, and then just set them down and walked away. And I'm like, oh my gosh, he's going to bring it. He might win that game by himself. So that'll be fun. At Green Bay, on Thursday night in week four.
Second Thursday night game.
I'm not a huge fan of that short week, but both teams got to go through it, right?
Right.
I just don't like it. I don't like having a Thursday game there.
It'll be a low score. It's early in the season.
Yeah.
Those usually are pretty crummy games.
Yeah, here's the thing. Lambeau has lost its luster. And so
don't get overconfident, Eric.
Oh no, I'm not overconfident. I'm done. I'm they have vanquished all the ghosts.
All the bad juju.
Yeah, it's all gone. So some of it's in New York now too, because he's what he is. So Packers game's going to be on a Thursday. And those are always wonky, so I was a little worried, but not as worried as I've been in the past now that they've lost their luster. Another potential revenge game. Carolina, this time not on the cement field in Carolina. Oh, it's new turf in Ford Field
with the new quarterback for the Panthers.
Yeah. So be interesting to see how that goes. A lot of former Lions coaches on that staff, and they'll have to bring their game, but at the same time, I very much think the defense is going to want to prove something there. That is a game that is going to be circled on the defensive players' charts as a game that they're going to want to make a statement on. After that, another 1 o'clock game at Tampa. Tampa's a mess.
That one should be circled. The Lions should be looking forward to that one as a win. That one is one where I'm like, yeah, that one's the one they should win.
After that, at Baltimore, that scares me.
Rod Wood, his son's going to get married that weekend.
Is it that weekend?
I don't know. I'm guessing it is. I'm guessing he asked the league, and I'm guessing they delivered.
Yeah, I mean, it very well could be. It's a silly story. But I mean, if they did made that work for Rod Wood, oh boy.
Changes the Ford family consigliere Rod Wood. You know, it just changes, everything. It's like this whole big machine of the NFL that we think it is. You know, there's supercomputers generating all these different schedules and stuff, and there's, teams of nerds with tape on their glasses trying to figure out how to get the schedule just right. And, when you get down to it, it's like, well, the president of the Lions, like, his son's getting married in Delaware, so he needs to be nearby if they play. It's not like he could skip the game or anything, so we're going to make sure they play Baltimore on the 22nd. Which people in lab coats have to put that in their algorithms to change the schedule around just to fit Rod Wood's personal schedule.
On the field, that game scares me a little bit. Lamar being back and with a contract, and if he's healthy, that's a scary game.
Nice, exciting game.
Yeah. Then the last game before the bye is back home. Lions host the Raiders on Monday Night Football.
Also, Halloween. It's not Halloween. It's the day before Halloween, but it's going to be like the Halloween game. Everybody's going to be in costume at Ford Field, and they'll have they'll be playing Monster Mash when they go to commercial. it'll have all the trappings of Halloween.
The crowd is going to go bananas.
Hopefully, deafening.
And if the Lions have a winning record, which they should going into that game, boy. I could just see them, the crowd, just taking this to an entirely new level. Bye week in week nine, which is nice to have that.
Right smack in the middle. We're used to seeing it right at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
Finally, yeah. Right in the middle of it.
So that's good news. It's been a while since they've had a late bye. Then week 10. They travel out to LA to take on the Chargers. That's a 4 o'clock start.
Probably our first 405 start in 3 years. Been a long time.
It's a tough game because, like, coming off the bye, the Lions should have the advantage. At the same time, I think the Chargers are an underrated team, and I think that they're really good. Also, at the same time, they're one of the most snake-bitten franchises as well.
So are we.
Right. So that's definitely seems like kind of a toss-em game. And then mid-November, back home against the Bears.
This is pre-Thanksgiving. This is the Sunday before Thanksgiving.
Yeah. So you get the Bears. So this is only your second divisional game.
Right.
Right. It's weird that you're not getting the second one until after the bye, but there it is, the Bears. And then they followed up with another divisional game against the Packers. That's on Thanksgiving. So the Lions haven't won on Thanksgiving in the last like six attempts, I think, or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it would be nice to get back in the win column, and it would be nice to sweep the Packers while doing so, because I don't know. I'm not scared of them anymore. So,
well, you're not sold on Jordan Love, but nobody's really seen him yet. So we'll see.
So following Thanksgiving, when they beat the Packers again, they will then go to New Orleans for the first week of December.
And a nice 10-day layoff before that Saints game.
Yeah. So again, when you have a long travel, game, it's they have some nice breaks there. So, I think it's going to mean a lot to like Anzalone and Aaron Glenn and Dan Campbell to be able to go in and beat that team. So it's going to be neat to see some extra motivation there. Week after that, they have their second game against Chicago. This one's at Chicago, the only outdoor stadium on the back half of the schedule.
That's big. The bye week hits, right? Well, it's even before the bye week because it's they have that Halloween-ish game against the Raiders. Yep. On Monday Night Football. Then they're at SoFi under the dome. They're hosting the Bears. They host the Packers. They go to the Superdome. And then Soldier Field hits December 10th. Hopefully the weather's not that bad yet.
And the rest of the games are in domes as well to close out the schedule. So, yeah, if you're hoping for a mild day in early December there against Chicago, and I'm sure they'll be prepared for that. They host Denver, the Denver Broncos in week 15. That game is a flex candidate. They may move that game to Saturday, or they may keep it on Sunday. They haven't decided. That'll be a game that they figure out what they're going to do with that a little bit later in the season, but be interesting to see what they do there. My guess is the Broncos would have to, be a better team than they were last year in order to.
Well, they might be in contention. It's possible.
It is. And look, they have a new coach in Sean Payton, but they also have a new offensive coordinator in Joe Lombardi.
Oh boy. Good luck.
So
why does he keep getting jobs? I don't get it.
I don't know. He
fooled around with the Chargers. They have this great offense and he's puttering around with it.
It's so interesting that he was with the Chargers and they fired him. And then the Chargers hired Kellen Moore, former Lions quarterback, mm-hmm. right?
Another retread.
And then Lombardi goes to another team that the Lions are going to be facing this year. So they'll get the interesting.
But they have the New Orleans connection is the Lombardi right. to Peyton. Yeah.
Right. So that'll be in Detroit, which day to be determined. Then they go on the road for the next two.
Christmas Eve in Minneapolis.
At Vikings, which is crazy that we haven't played the Vikings at all, and it's already week 16 at this point, right? This is the first time they played the Vikings. It's a tough game at Minnesota late in the season, potential playoff implications on the line. And then the following week at Dallas on Saturday night, again, in front of a national audience, going to have probably have playoff implications. Divisional rankings could be up on the, you know, playoff seeding could be in play. And again, Dallas is always a team that, you know, tends to get the breaks. And so the Lions will always want revenge on them. And so that's another tough game. So that's two tough games. And then they close the season out with a home game against the Vikings. So they play Vikings twice. Could be
for the division championship.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the Vikings could be a pile of waste at that point as well. And who knows? But yeah, like they finally don't play the Packers in week 18, which they seem to have done for the last however long. They get the Vikings this time around. I think the Vikings are, you know, you've kind of figured them out last year. And I don't think they got better. You know, I don't think the Vikings are a team where you look at them and you're like, oh, look, they gained more than they lost. I don't think that's the case. So close the season out with the Vikings. So, all right. So here's the question. Or here's an interesting, couple interesting things. I made a game-by-game prediction with Jeremy over Pride of Detroit. And last year when we did it, I predicted the Lions would finish with a 9-8 record. So I nailed
it. You nailed it.
I was much better than I do in our pick'ems on the podcast here.
You follow your heart too much.
Yeah, that's accurate. So I did predictions again, and spoiler, I had a couple more wins than what I did last year.
Yeah, no surprise.
But before I tell you what my record was, I want to ask you a different question. The Lions are favored in how many games this year, do you think? How many games are the Lions favored by Vegas?
Out of this crop of games, 10. 10 okay. Of 17.
Here's the thing. It's actually 12. They're favored in 12 of the 17 games. I don't know if I want to put you on the spot and make you guess the five that they're not favored in. You already guessed one of them with KC.
Yeah, so we only got to guess four.
You were accurate. If you want to guess or
I will. Can just tell I will.
You. All right. No. All right, please.
At Ravens, October 22nd.
That is the second game that they are not favored in. All they're right. Favored. Baltimore's favored by 2.
At Los Angeles Chargers, November 12th.
That is also correct. They are favored by 2.5.
All right. At the Minnesota Vikings on December 24th.
That's correct. Minnesota by 1.
So I got 1 left.
Yep.
And it's either in New Orleans or in Dallas. And I'm going to bet it's going to be in Dallas on December 30th.
You got them. You got them all. 5 for 5.
Pretty Dallas straightforward.
Is a 2.5 point favorite. Now here's the deal. Here's
favorite where it gets in every home game. How about that?
Wow. Here's the deal. When I did my pick'ems, my record was 12-5.
Yeah.
Right. And the 5 games that they're not favored in just happened to be the 5 games I picked them to lose.
You're too chalk. So you have them going 8-0 at Ford Field and then 4-5. Well, I mean, I guess that's fine. What am I saying?
That's what I did. I didn't know the rankings. I knew the I knew the Kansas City games rankings, but that was about it. Both Jeremy and I ended up with 12-5. And here's the deal. I probably could have given them more wins, but I tried to not think with my heart too much.
14-3. That's
what we're gonna have, man. No, I tried not to think with my heart too much. I tried to anticipate, a letdown game and stuff like that. But yeah, it's weird. Those are the exact 5 games that I had projected them to lose. Now, here's the thing. I'm not my projection last year of 9-8, I didn't hit the games. I didn't hit all the games, yeah, right?
Well, or anything sure, like of that. Course. I just, and you won't this year either.
Yeah. I just landed on the right finishing number. Score. And so,
because they are those five games that we listed where they're not favorite, they're going to win one, maybe even two of those games. They'll win one or two. And then they're going to blow a home game or two that's going to, you know, confound us at the same time. You're 12 and five. That's fine. I would be more of 11 and six guy, unsurprisingly to you. Maybe 11 and six or 10 and seven. Probably more 11 and six. I think the Lions should be upset with themselves if they only finish 10 and seven, which is bizarre to be saying that.
I know. That's what I was thinking. I was like, my goodness, we're talking about, look, if they haven't had double digit wins since 2014, right? And like, we're talking about double digit wins being like the floor at this point. And that's because they've amassed and the talent that they have, they've put themselves in a situation where they're on the rise. And the rest of the NFC North is, you know, taking step backs and trying to rebuild and trying to refocus and reformat, whereas the Lions are ascending. And look, if the league didn't think the Lions were a true contender, they don't put the Lions in the opening game against the Chiefs. You know what I mean? Like, they just don't. Like, that's a huge feather in the organization's cap to be able to be put in that first game, because they don't want to put a stinker up on the first game of the season. They want it to be competitive. And if you listen to what the schedule makers talk about, they said the Lions' culture, competitive nature, and what they did to finish last season all point towards them being a team that should make, you know, the opening weekend one to remember. So I mean, I'm excited for it. I'm awfully nervous about that first week, but the schedule is workable, and there are some hiccups, and there are some times when they're going to have to refocus really hard in order to be able to maintain their best selves. But it's a lot of winnable games. A lot of winnable games on that schedule. And that's, I don't think, something that we've said, oh gosh, in a long time, right?
They're in the middle of the pack when it comes to opponents winning percentage. But that's all based off of last year. And
right.
Remember, the Lions were at the top of it last year. Like, they had like the worst.
Finished at the bottom. Yeah, it was crazy.
Big swing. Yeah, it's a big swing. And just like what happens every year, you know, we're talking about these games. We're like, well, this team will be good, this team will be bad. And you and I are pretty lockstep on all that, but that's not going to be true. There's going to be one or two of these teams that are going to be a lot better than we think. And then there's going to also be one or two of these teams that are not going to be as good as we thought they'd be. So, and hopefully the Lions is one of them, because that's a possibility. But like, out of that group, those five games, they're not going to be favored, or they're not favored in right now. It's like, well, that could look totally different.
Yeah,
in the middle of the season, because one of those teams might be terrible, you know, like if they lose a quarterback, or it just doesn't come together, or whatever. And then the same way, you know, they go play the Saints, like, oh, they should beat the Saints. And it's like, no, the Saints are awesome. The Saints are like 11 and 2 going to that game. You know, and it's like, really? But, you know, it happens.
I'm selfishly glad that the Thursday night games are away, so that I
that you don't have to be there on Thursday night.
Yeah, because like, I have responsibilities, and it's just going to be easier for me that those games are away. But at the same time, I'm super excited about that Monday night game. That's a very winnable game. And the crowd is always electric on Monday night. Lions are favored by 3.5. And if they are as good as we think they are, that should be a game that they go in and make a statement. And that's exciting to be able to watch that. So, look, it's gonna be fun. Like, you know, we're going to get a lot of Fox games, but we're also going to get Mike Tirico for the Kansas City game. That's the NBC's crew, right?
Yep.
We're going to get
Al Michaels.
Al Michaels, Primetime Video, right? Yep. And Prime Video. Primetime
Video. Video. Is that an old VHS store, rental store? Primetime Video.
Then they've got, like I said, ESPN. They're going to have a CBS game. They're going to have another. They're going to be on ESPN again on that Saturday Night Dallas
Joe
game.
Joe and Troy. And maybe the Manning brothers.
It's going to be, yeah, it's going to be interesting. Boy. So, yeah, we didn't talk about the preseason. It's going to be interesting. No, you know, what's the most interesting part is that they're going to do joint training camp.
The Panthers, the
Giants.
Right?
Giants.
Oh, Giants. Okay.
And that leads into week one. Then they're going to have Jacksonville in week two. They're going to have Carolina in week three, ironically, at Carolina.
Yeah, I know. And then they're going to play them during the regular season too.
Yeah. And but that's kind of weird because it's going to be like, okay, our third string backups and guys who aren't going to make the team are going to face your third string backups and guys that aren't going to make the team. And then we'll play the starters a few weeks later.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting, but yeah, it's a tad unusual to play a team in the preseason and the regular season.
Is that it? Hopefully we got everything. Whenever we're done, there's always like, oh, you know what? We should have talked about that. I wonder if people listening are going like, what's wrong with these idiots? They just passed over this, this whole topic that everybody's been talking about.
You know, I think we didn't spend a ton of time on draft strategy and stuff, but I think that's kind of been talked to death. You know, I think we can do some more fun stuff over the summer. We're going to have, from a media perspective, we're going to have rookie training camp coming up here. Rookie training camp actually starts on Friday. It goes Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then you're going to have like about a week off or so. And then they start OTAs. And then they have a week OTAs or 3 days of OTAs. And then next week, 3 days of OTAs. The mini camp and then another OTAs and then that's it. And then by the time they hit the second week of June or like, you know, halfway into that third week, then that's it. You don't hear a whole, you're not going to hear a whole lot from the Lions. They're going to take about a month and a half off. And then at the end of July,
hit the ground running.
Then it really starts. And it's going to be exciting. Like, That first preseason game is going to be mid-August. You know what I mean? Like,
it's right around the corner.
Yeah. And it'll be here before we know it. But for now, we're going to see what OTAs bring us. We're going to see what rookie minicamp brings us. Maybe we'll get some questions answered. Maybe we'll see some positional changes. But there'll be plenty to talk about, over the next few weeks. Of the activities. Yep.
As far as ratings go, we didn't see any movement there on the Apple podcast. We got a few more reviews on Spotify, and that's great. And nice. I would assume there'd be more reviews if we made more shows. So that's bad on us.
Yeah. The schedule is just, we're not matching up right now.
It's better now than in the middle of the year.
Right, right. Yeah, we'll find a rhythm. Yep. Excuse me.
But that's it. I don't know. You have anything else to add?
No, I'm glad that we were able, like, we probably could have done this earlier in the week, but we wanted to get the schedule in on it. And so I know people were anxious to get the pod out, but we wanted to make sure we could double dip on topics here.
Well, I hope everybody listened this week, and until next time, let's go Lions.